Great to have you again for another episode of the Millennium Live podcast. I'm your host, Connor Tuohy, here for another great episode with, by the way, 250 episodes under our belt for the podcast, which was started back in November of 2018 to provide the knowledge and wealth conversation of our executives, our partners, and our members. And I'm very excited to continue that in 2024. For a great episode today, we're bringing on an awesome partner who's having such an impact in transforming the chaos and unsecured nature of the typical vendor onboarding process into an orderly, secured, and trackable process so you can sleep better at night. And talking all about the supplier onboarding and the vendor master data management system that needs improvement, I have PaymentWorks here today. And to talk about this and what PaymentWorks is doing and talk about the industry as a whole and onboarding, I have Angela Sarno. She is the Vice President of Marketing at PaymentWorks. Angela, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to come on the podcast and chat with me.
Hey, I am a huge zealot about vendor management. I'm like a newly converted churchgoer here. I can't stop talking about it, so I'm happy to be talking about it with you. Thank you for the intro and congrats on 250 podcasts. That's no small feat.
Yes, and that's a great compliment coming from a podcast host yourself. So, Angela, I want to jump into this because we're going to have a great conversation, and I think the best way to introduce a podcast episode like this one is to invent a holiday. And I think we should invent a holiday when this podcast was recorded, make the Christmas break come sooner. But PaymentWorks recently invented a holiday. It's called the Vendor Management Appreciation Day, just celebrated and on December 12th. So I think that's a perfect way to start. And, you know, why the need to invent a holiday? And I'm sure it's important, but I'd rather you tell us all about it.
Yes. If ever you just want some presents, you invent a holiday and you call it that day. So we invented Vendor Management Appreciation Day very specifically to shine a light on the professionals who do this work and the process that they do for vendor onboarding and management. So a quick aside, PaymentWorks ourselves were digital supplier onboarding, and we go a step further than most of these sort of supplier portals in that we actually have a warranty for bank information. We are making sure all of that vendor data is true and correct, and that you're not paying a fraudster instead of the person or entity you intend to pay. So we see firsthand the humans who are trying to do all of that. When we talk to prospects, we talk at industry events, and the pressure and the stress it puts on them to always have to be 100% right all the time. I could talk to you for the next 3 hours about social engineering frauds, okay? And I'm sure we're going to talk about that. But what I see are people actually crying at work, people losing sleep at work because they're so scared to make a mistake and be tricked. There is this chasm between the importance of what these humans do and the sort of respect and resources that they are given by most organizations, but yet there's so much riding on every stroke of the keyboard. And we're not just talking about fraud. We have compliance issues. We have just general mistake issues. We have IRS fines. We have supplier diversity data. All these things someone's got to get right. And they are paid, people who do supplier onboarding are paid roughly what a fast food employee is paid. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but I haven't seen a headline where a Taco Bell employee stopped $1 million fraud attempt. So there's something out of line. So we invented the holiday to celebrate them and the work they do.
Yes. And they do very important work. I mean, it's you're talking about cost saving applications. You're talking about fraud prevention and compliance risk. And you're talking about revenue that's on the table. So, you know, why is vendor onboarding and change management that comes with it so challenging for most organizations, and how are they dealing with this?
Well, I mean, to be honest, change management's a challenge for anybody in any role because humans are involved. But And if you have an organization that doesn't have an office that's dedicated to transformation and improvement, change just sort of comes where there's the least amount of resistance, right? We often find when we're talking to prospects or folks in the field that this function, this vendor onboarding and change management function, it often hasn't even been documented because people who've been doing it 15, 20, it's not unheard of 30 years, someone's been doing the data entry and collection around this and nobody ever wrote it down because it was largely considered clerical and it hasn't been updated in so long, it's hard to transform something that isn't even documented to start with. So I'd say that's one of the big struggles. And right now in market, the options to transform this function, to digitize, are half-baked at best. If you're trying to move off paper forms, you see you have a problem. Don't want to do a paper form, don't want to do a PDF. We want to do something better. So you're going to move to a supplier portal, but you still have that human who has to vet all that information. Then you just have a really expensive paper process that you put in place. So I think, honestly, I think the problem is just so ingrained that very few people think that it can be fixed.
We talk a lot about digital transformation. I mean, we've been talking about it for quite some time, and it's on the minds of most procurement and supply chain professionals. Yet vendor onboarding continues to be largely manual, and there's some solutions that are just dabbling into it now and could be out there that a lot of our members are probably going like, man, I wish this was a solution that I would like to know about. Why hasn't automation of vendor onboarding made greater strides in their digital transformation journey?
Yes. I mean, I alluded to it a little bit that I think the solutions that have been available have been clunky, but I want to take it up a level. Digital transformation has come to all corners of P2P and supply chain, except for some reason, as you said, manual onboarding. So I'm going to say it out loud. It's a culture issue. People seem to think that the status quo is good enough for here. If they just trained those people more, if they were just more diligent, if they just crossed their fingers harder, everything would be fine over there. And the skill set needed to do this work, I alluded to the 15, 20, 30 year tenure out there. The skill set needed to do this work has evolved, but the people doing it haven't necessarily evolved to be comfortable with the digital experience. Or conversely, there's those people that are sweating about it the way I mentioned, but they don't have a voice at their organization because it's not a respected role. So I'm going to go back to the idea of culture, that folks way up at the top are still thinking of this little function as clerical and not in need of attention the way invoice automation is in need of attention, or the way supply chain logistics management is in need of automation. And I would like to preach loudly that they're wrong, that if you don't get the automation and the data right at the very beginning of your relationship with that supplier, none of the rest of that matters because you don't know if you can trust it or not.
This is a question I was probably thinking of asking you even before we started the podcast, but according to my spam email, I have about 20 or so messages relating to my Geek Squad subscription that I've never signed up for, but apparently it's still in business. Why is it that social engineering scams continue to be a threat to businesses, specifically small, medium size enterprises? You know, I think with the adoption of AI, that's going to get to a level that is more realistic. But why do they succeed in a world where everyone should know that they're coming?
Because they're designed to. It's in the name, social engineering. Humans will always be played. So I told you earlier, I live in New England. I'm not from here, but it's the same way that Tom Brady could do a quarterback sneak every time it was fourth and inches. Everybody knew, the whole defense knew he was going to do it, but 9 times out of 10, he pulled it off.
But they let it happen.
Right, because they weren't trained enough or they weren't vigilant enough. I mean, think about how absurd that sounds. This type of fraud is a full-time job for these fraudsters. And you mentioned AI. The barrier to entry is now much lower. You can just go buy some code. You can just go buy some scripts. You don't need to know how to code. You don't need to know how to hack. All you're doing is tricking a person, and we are all capable of being tricked. One moment of inattention, one moment of rush, one person asking you to break the process, who usually asks you to break the process, and you're going to, it goes back to the culture problem, I think. These fraudsters exploit a couple of things. They're patient, first of all. So it's a full-time job. They're sitting, they're watching, they're waiting. They are paying attention to cultures where higher-ups are often asking for processes to be broken. And how can they pay attention to that? That is through hacking. That is through somebody on the inside. That is, there's so many fraud vectors for folks to come in at. You can't possibly protect the perimeter in all these ways. I'd say the biggest thing, though, the biggest reason they continue to work is because they exploit the impossibility of the job of vendor management. The constant pressure on those folks to go as fast as possible, but also be right 100% of the time, that's at odds. And if your last line of defense is a human, sooner or later, the headline in the paper is going to belong to you because we're all going to be tricked. I do this for a living and I have accidentally clicked on the thing. We all have.
Of course. That's how we continue to get the spam mail, but
watch out for the Geek Squad.
Yeah. But I swear, I have never had my computer fixed by these people. What can organizations do when we're talking about risk to mitigate this? And specifically without investing in automation, which might be trickier to do, especially if it's manual, but what can an organization do if they're going to go that route? But also maybe what are some of the newer technology that's coming out, especially with AI available? You can fight AI with AI these days, talking to a lot of cyber people out there, cyber folks. So, and really just, Angela, just, you know, what can organizations do to really, because you know what's going to happen, prepare for it.
Yes. So, I mean, I have a vested interest in it. Painwork solves lots of these problems. However, what I have a bigger vested interest in is those people I talked about. Whether if you have an organization that cannot afford to, or at this moment, or whatever it is, invest in a tool to take this pressure and the risk off, then I'm going to give you a couple things you need to do to start. The number one thing would be start by actually documenting the existing process around vendor onboarding and change management. If it has never been written down, or if it hasn't been revisited in the past 6 months, that's how fast these things change, you want to revisit it. And you want to write down every step. Who owns it by title and then by name? You want to talk about your approval workflows. You want to talk about the tools you have. Do I use the IRS tax lookup? Do I use the early warning system to check bank accounts? And who owns that and what the outcomes are? Document it thoroughly and then do your workflows for every situation. A domestic EIN, this is the process. Once you have it documented, you want to get folks at the highest levels to sign off on it and agree, this is our process. So in this conversation, you want to bring risk to the table, you want compliance to the table, you want procurement, you want finance, everybody who has a stake in using vendor data. And besides pointing out some holes, oh, I thought you owned that. No, I own that sort of thing. This is going to help your insurability enormously. Social engineering losses are rarely covered by cyber insurance or crime insurance. If they are, they're generally really low limits, much lower than your average loss. And so we've actually co-authored a piece with the Chubb Insurance Group, a template, write it down. I'll give you the link so you can put it in here. It's a free resource. Because your insurance agent, when you come asking for coverage, the first thing they're going to ask for is your written documentation around vendor onboarding. So if you don't have that, this is a great place to start. It mitigates risk, it increases your insurability, and it gives you clear lines of ownership. Lastly, my own personal thing about culture, if you get the higher ups to sign off on it, the next thing you want to do is every time someone asks you to break that written process that everyone has agreed to, you start documenting that. And then you have a real clear case of, oh, this exception is one we hadn't thought of, or, oh, this department really isn't respecting the process and they're introducing fraud risk. So you can now have everybody in agreement about how important this piece of this process is for your company.
That's perfect. And I want to mention, I mean, beyond fraud risk, I want to talk about compliance and basic inefficiency risks. Talk a little bit about that, Angela, about, and if you can elaborate on the role of vendor onboarding to address each of these types of risk and fraud and compliance and inefficiency.
Definitely. If you don't get it right from the beginning, you're cleaning up a mess along the way. So for instance, if you have any sort of federal research dollars or you just want to be traded in the public world, you've got serious things to consider when it comes to sanctions, right? And I'm not a sanctions expert, but I know which lists you're supposed to check, just debarment, OFAC, you might have something in the state, but you're supposed to check that every single time you issue a purchase order. So I promise you, 95% of the people who just heard me say that, their organizations are not doing that. In fact, it's probably 100. I haven't met the organization that's doing that. They do it once a year. They do it twice a year, maybe. But you're supposed to check every single time. So if you have vendor onboarding that continually monitors sanctions lists, then you always know you're in compliance. If you marry that duty with vendor onboarding, then you don't have to, you can take that off your plate of things you're worried about. You probably have insurance requirements of your vendors. You probably have conflicts of interest requirements of your vendors. Get all of that up front, along with expiration dates for all these things, right when you onboard. Don't even put them into your ERP until you check all those boxes. That way your organization knows the vendors in your ERP are in compliance with what you want. There's no guessing. Did we get their insurance? Do we have it? Is it on file? Organizations have a lot of supplier diversity initiatives, whether that's supporting small businesses in their area, veteran-owned businesses, those sorts of things. How are you capturing that you're actually doing business that way? Capture it at the beginning of the relationship. Have a source of truth before anything even gets in the ERP, and then everyone in your organization can stop worrying or thinking about, is it okay? Is this vendor up to date? Because you know that they are. There's a lot at stake with compliance-related fines. There's a lot of internal strife at stake if you mess up conflicts of interest, all sorts of things like that. So it's worth the investment in time to get it all up front to save the money and headaches that can come down the way.
Yeah, Angela. And before I let you go off this podcast, I do want to just understand because and probably plug PaymentWorks because of all the really great initiatives that are going on there about how you can really stop losing sleep over this. And compliance and fraud risk can be something of the past when it comes to how automation and AI could help this in the future. But to make a case, you know, for our members who are listening to this podcast, and we thank you for that, but they're thinking about investing in automation of vendor onboarding. Why should they choose an organization like PaymentWorks or an organization that has these solutions for them? What are the main things that they should consider and a timeline, a timely approach to handle this?
I think one of the things, everyone's always asking for a business case. When you sell software, they're always asking for the business case. And I want to turn it a little on its head and say, you make the business case for not investing in automating vendor onboarding and management, because the status quo is a business decision and it has costs and it has an ROI or a lack of an ROI at the end of it. So do that in concert anytime you have to make the business case. Like, have somebody in earnest write a business case for not doing anything and see where it ends up. So what should they be thinking about? Obviously, the hard and soft costs that we all think about in terms of time or subscriptions to different resources, like the early warning system that I talked about. I'd say that there's another layer to this that in particular, the world of procurement and finance are suffering from right now, which is headcount. So automating this can, of course, I would never say it eliminates headcount. I would say it transforms it. You get a different type of employee, go to like an analyst level now. And now you're talking about being able to give people promotions or hire a different skill set, and people have tools. Guess what? They like their job better when they're not losing sleep, worrying that they're going to get fired because they got tricked about something. So I think you have to take in the headcount issue. Like, what can I do to invest my employees that are already here, that have great internal knowledge, but who are clearly getting burned out? How can we up-level what they're doing and give them a different lease on their jobs. But I think in the timely world, and this is horrible to say, but our fastest sales always come right after a fraud happens. It's just no one thinks it's going to happen to them, or they think, I don't have the time for this. I'll worry about it in the future, or we'll try it next quarter, or we'll get it in the next budget cycle. How much have you budgeted to get stolen by a fraudster? That has to be part of your business case for not investing, because the chances of it happening are significant. I mean, this could really hurt an organization, right? So thinking about what your risk tolerance is. Could we lose $100,000 and it's worth not having it invested? Not a lot of organizations can say that, but maybe some can. So I'd really urge folks to put the effort into talking to their risk folks about their insurance and what is covered. I think about the employee satisfaction, which is not something a lot of folks are considering with this, but that we've seen have a real impact. We've seen promotions. We've seen people get extra headcount because the value of their work, once they automated this, raised so high that they were able to attract more investment. And I love plugging Paymorts. I love working here. I think we solve a real problem. But I will say, for Vendor Management Appreciation Day, we created a website full of free resources. So folks should check out vendormanagementappreciationday.com. Long URL, I know. But there is the write it down template. There's the document the exceptions. There is a case for not investing. There's a compliance checklist. There's a tax cleanup, like all sorts of tools. Start somewhere. Start with the free stuff. We've got a lot of it, and we'd love to share what we've learned.
Angelo, the one thing I will say is you're making it easy as far as decision making of what to do. And thank you for taking the time to talk a lot about how the real value of something like this is in terms of culture, trust, cost management, and risk management, and providing opportunities for ROI. And I think that's really all that needs to be said in terms of what PaymentWorks is doing and celebrating Vendor Management Appreciation Day. Don't forget to do that December 12th, 2024.
That's right. Save the date. Maybe we'll have a song by then and we can sing it.
Mark it on your calendars. Thank you to our listeners for listening to another episode of the Millennium Live podcast series. And thank you to Angela, VP of Marketing at PaymentWorks, for joining the podcast and learning a lot today. I know I have, and I know all of our members, specifically on supply chain and HR and benefits and even cybersecurity, could take away from this episode. So Angela, thank you for your knowledge, and hope to chat with you later in the year to maybe have an update and maybe do a part two. And it'd be awesome to pick your brain about New York and Pennsylvania and is a good place to live around the country, because that's important too.
It is. Being happy. Thank you, Connor. I really appreciate the time.